This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 22. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Well, hello, Garrers. Hello, Berners. How are you, Berners?
I'm very well, thank you. In PV Towers, I've been simulating this morning. I've been hitting lots of balls around. And I don't know if anyone saw, but if you have a look on our Twitter feed, the young guys at Fusion, who make the Fusion Skyr, sent us a full-size version of their bat. So I've been getting to work on doing a demolition job in central London. And I can tell you what, this thing is a weapon of mass destruction. It's big, it's orange, and it smashes it a long way.
And what's its purpose, mate, apart from smashing it a long way?
Its purpose is to have lots and lots of fun and potentially take it out in the middle on a Saturday league game and try and get away with it for as long as possible.
I'm not convinced that's going to work, that. But I've seen the fact that they've got a new bat out. Yeah, interesting. I'm not sure the market's going to be that big, but there you go.
Well, no, it's actually bespoke for us. There's only one in the world.
Oh, is that right? Okay, all right, fair enough.
It's a Berners limited edition, and it's kind of the same colour I go when I'm on holiday in Mallorca.
It's the kind of bat that you want to leave in your bag until you're on tour or maybe playing a village game or something like that, and there's no umpires around, just a couple of players who are filling in, and you stroll out with that. No one's going to challenge you. Well, they might do after the sixth six of the over.
Crash, bang, wallop.
Are you sure that bat's legal? Well, let's talk about high-level things, and there was an article that I noticed this week which did a bit of a hatchet job on the English bowler, Jade Dernmach, and it was the Telegraph newspaper, saying that he's all glamour and no substance. So did you see that article, Garris?
I did see the article. Yeah, I think it's a bit harsh, to be honest. You know, he's obviously not he's not been great at keeping the runs down in ODI cricket, and that statistic's also come out this week, is that he's been the most expensive by quite a long way in his first games. You know, to come out with those sort of things, I think, is a little bit harsh.
It's definitely an angle, but the idea behind it, which is that he is quite expensive and he's well known for having lots of variations, but that doesn't seem to produce the kind of results that you'd want, i.e. to keep the run rate down a little bit.
I do think that. I mean, he's got a good slower ball, but that's pretty much, I mean, towards the end of an innings in particular, people are beginning to line that up, and if he does tend to bowl a quicker one, then they use their reactions to be able to get some bat on it and squirt it into various areas, or in fact get a big bit of bat on it and hit it over the top. You know, the criticism of Jade has always been that his length ball tends to skid a little bit rather than bounce effectively, and as a result people can hit through the bounce, and that's always been the case. I remember when he came out to practice with the England team when we were in Australia one year, and that was always the notable thing, is that players were able to get on top of his length and hit it through the offside in particular. So he needs to bowl arrow straight, and he needs to vary his pace. But when those two things don't happen particularly well, he goes for a huge amount of runs.
I mean, they showed his pitch map actually from the other day. I think it was 0 for almost 90,
yeah,
which is, you know, pretty for a professional cricketer that's playing international cricket. That's pretty disappointing figures. But it was literally scattergun, and I think they made a good point that, you know, it, even with his variation, you know, being sometimes ineffective, if he's not bowling a consistent line at that level, he's, you know, you're going to get demolished because you can't set a field, and if guys are in, you know, like Guptill's, you know, seeing it like a beach whale, and if you've got a bowler that's running in and has no idea about what he's doing, what chances do you have? So
Yeah, I get that, but I think it's about having a stop ball, isn't it? And I don't think anybody could say, apart from the slower ball, that what Jade's stop ball is. And you know that Broadley will go back of a length and straight when somebody's coming after him, and then mixing his variation around that, and that gives him a chance of competing in any over that he's bowling against anybody. And also he can hit Yorkers as well. Whereas with Jade, you know, what's his stop ball other than his slower ball? And people are setting themselves up and carting it all over the place now. So it's a challenge for him because, as I say, his length ball is very skiddy, comes onto the bat and people can hit through it.
Too many tattoos. They must have done his eyeballs in.
So there's a lesson here for younger players in that you have to be able to be adaptable. You have to be able to think about your game, and you have to be able to bowl variations if you want to be successful, but you also need to find a stock ball that's going to do a job for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely, because your variations then become impactful if they're putting around a decent stock ball. And you watch all of the great guys in world cricket, you know, they've got a ball that they can bowl over and over again, and then that can hold people down, and then the slower ball or the Yorker becomes a real good variation. And you know, everybody talks about Wakar Yunus's Yorkers, and but actually his length ball and his bumper were blooming good as well, which made his Yorker very, very impactful. You know, everybody talks about Malinga's Yorker, but actually he's got a back of a length ball and a cutter that he chucks into the middle of a pitch, which are also really effective. So, you know, going back to Jade, he needs to really work on some stop balls because he has a lot of variations, but unfortunately it's only his variation that he goes with now, and as a consequence he's getting nailed.
And speaking of players' news and things in the news, we've got a new feature this week, so let's head over to the newsroom and catch up with the latest that's happening in the world of Pitch Vision with the Pitch Vision News.
Welcome to Pitch Vision News. Here are the headlines. Pitch Vision has been installed at the ICC Global Academy in Dubai. The ball tracking technology is being used daily by international players and locals alike. GCA head analyst Sam Charnley told us the fact that players can capture the performance data and then share it with coaches in other locations is of massive benefit to the players. Pitch Vision user Kumar A78 has shot past 5,000 runs scored in the nets. The 26-year-old from India is a regular practicing his batting on Pitch Vision, scoring his runs at an impressive strike rate of 101. Pitch Vision has launched the revolutionary cricket simulator at London's Bloomsbury Lanes bowling alley. During the launch event, an enthusiastic crowd batted and smashed their way into the early hours. The lane is now open for public bookings on 02 07 183 1979. A controversial Pitch Vision video of the day has gone viral with over 50,000 hits since it was first posted online. The video, showing a controversial stumping decision from two angles, has caused major arguments to erupt in the comments section, with no clear outcome. For more details on these stories, check the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision News for this week.
Okay, so back to the world of Pitch Vision Academy coaching, and we're going to have a couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners this week, as we always do at this stage in the show. And of course, the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, you've got the two questions this week. What's the first one out of the mailbag?
I have. The first one is from Lee, and it's a very, very unique question, actually. All to do with his eyes, but he's been playing cricket nearly 30 years, and he's saying that he's colourblind to red and green. So he can see red and green normally, but struggles when there is a small speck of red on a green background or the other way around. He's saying it's never been a problem as of yet, so he's enjoyed his cricket so far. However, this year he's struggling to see the ball, which is quite awful, really. So he's asking for some help and just wondering if we know of any eyewear potentially which might kind of eradicate this issue and get him back seeing the ball, because he wants to play his cricket.
Yeah, well, I've done a little bit of research into this. I mean, obviously not an optician, not a qualified eye doctor by any stretch of the imagination, but I had a little look at some of the options, and there are a pair of sunglasses that Oakley do, which are designed for target shooting, and they enhance certain colours beyond other ones, and one of the colours that they enhance is red. So on a green background, so it's a bit of an expensive way to find out if they work or not. So maybe you can find a way of trialing them or not. But the Oakley G26 lenses are ones which might do the job for you to help enhance that red on the green if you're having trouble seeing the ball all of a sudden. You ever come across these, Gareth?
Yeah, I'm colorblind, mate, so I know all about this.
Oh, well,
and
although
the red green thing didn't really bother me from a batting perspective, I'll tell you where I used to get into trouble was if we ever played on a tree lined ground and I was keeping wicket, and somebody threw the ball into the sort of leaf line of trees, I used to momentarily lose a ball. And one day at a place called Collingham, a ball came in from the boundary. I completely lost it. Unfortunately, it hit me smack bang in the middle of the chest rather than sconing me on the end of the nose or in the eye. But so I understand all about that. And in fact, there's a number of people who have played a good level of cricket. Sir Ian Botham being one of them, who's also colourblind. So we always used to have lots of conversations about how difficult it was for us colourblind people. But actually, in the main, it wasn't that difficult at all. It was my lack of ability that made my career difficult rather than my colour blindness. So it's an interesting one for me. And the fact is that, you know, we're talking about somebody who's been able to see the ball perfectly well in all the years that he's played cricket up until this point. So I'm not sure how much it's related to the colour blindness, bearing in mind that it's, you know, he's had a good career where he's seen the ball pretty well so far. And I wonder whether it's, you know, what you're actually watching, you know, if you've made any change to how intently you're watching the ball. And this goes back to one of our conversations that we had a long time ago, is some people will watch the sort of the periphery and then focus in on the ball, and other people will focus on the ball very intently, picking out a very fine bit of detail like the seam or something like that. Somebody like a Kevin Peterson does that, and then focus more broadly on where the ball's coming from and where the field is and so on and so forth. So I wonder, I'm questioning the whole colour blindness thing purely because this guy's actually done really well so far in his career and it's not affected him to date, and then all of a sudden it's just changed.
And so you didn't see any change in your colour blindness throughout the time you played?
No, I was useless when a good bowler bowled at me all the way throughout my career, to be brutally honest.
I mean, I guess it's less of a problem when you're batting because of sight screens anyway, unless you're playing at a level where the bowler's coming out of the trees.
But even then, you know, I played most of my club cricket without sight screens. Anybody who's played at Ventnor will realise that the sight screens are a bit of a token gesture of Ventnor because they're up on the hills. So, you know, that didn't bother me either. The only time, as I say, that I struggled a little bit was when we played at tree-lined grounds like Collingham, where the ball was came out of the tree line and I got hit. But that only happened once or twice in my career.
And in fact, we've all experienced, I certainly have anyway, and I've certainly players I've played with have mentioned it as well. We played at a ground this weekend, just gone, where it's a beautiful picturesque ground, but it's at the bottom of a tree-lined hill, a very large tree-lined hill. And so when you look up about 40 feet in the air and you're still seeing trees, and then it goes to blue sky. Well, it did last week. Slate grey sky normally, I would imagine. And our captain said, I remember we played a game here once where the ball was skied up in the air and it went up and I saw it go into the blue, and then I saw it drop back down behind the trees, and then I didn't see it again and it landed about 3 feet in front of me. So maybe it's not even a colour blindness thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that goes back to a point I just made. I'm not sure that it is, to be brutally honest. So I think it's brilliant research that you've done. Absolutely magnificent. Well done on coming out of that. And it would be worth trying. But ultimately, you know, there's probably some other good reasons why that's happening, purely because, you know, he's had success so far in his career and it's only something that's come in now. And it's an easy one to relate it to the colour blindness. But I wonder whether it's a visual frequency, a visual focus thing rather than the colour blindness.
It'd be interesting to have a chat with him a little more and find out what's changed. What's the factor that's changed? Maybe he's fielded all his life at, you know, in one fielding position, and this season he's found himself in a different fielding position, and the angle is different, and so he's having a bit of trouble with that, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely, and that can happen, can't it? You know, because there are some fielding positions in the game of cricket that I didn't fancy very much because I hadn't done it very much, pretty much. So you know, gully line was a horrible angle for me. Whereas backward point, which isn't too far away from that, I used to absolutely jump up and down to get in that position when I was in the field. So. It could be a whole number of things, but you know, I'm not saying it isn't the colour blindness, but I'd want to eliminate a lot of other variables first before we went to that one.
Yeah, okay. Well, hopefully, Lee, that's given you some things to experiment with, but we're very keen to find out more. So maybe you can come back to us when you've tried a couple of different things and let us know what your self-experimentation comes up with. What's the next question, Berners?
Next question comes in from Yothi. And he's from New Delhi. He's got a son of 9 years old and he is obsessed with cricket. He watches cricket all the time and he wants to become a cricketer, but he's just got a couple of questions for our expert panel. The first one being, what are the basic requirements to become a good cricketer? The second, is there any method of examining or evaluating the capability of a young player? And thirdly, he's just a little bit worried with this whole cricket obsession that it's going to take over from, obviously, any parent's major focus with a child, and that's his academic schooling. So what do you reckon, guys? I think there's one word here, balance, that might well come into play.
Well, this is a fascinating question on a number. It's three questions, really, and we could probably fill several podcasts with the answer. But I'm very interested in your thoughts on this, Gareth, where I guess the question is driving towards, is there a way of doing standardized testing for cricket? And can we go a little bit too far down the line and try and do too much?
Well, there is some standardized stuff, and both Australia and the ECB have come up with some talent tests, and they're very similar, actually, even though they haven't consulted each other on it, or there's been limited consultation. And it's all around the basics of a game, really. So from a fast bowling point of view, it's about hitting length, it's about hitting a bumper, it's about hitting a Yorker. For spin, it's about landing it in an area and then having an arm ball or a variation. And, you know, batting wise, it's about hitting gaps off both pace and spin. However, all of this stuff doesn't get tested, particularly in England. I can't talk about Australia, but particularly England, until players get to 12 or 13 is the first time that the talent tests come in. So if you relate it back into the question that we've been given, where we're talking about a 9-year-old, you know, that's way ahead. You've got 3 years of enjoyment and growth before you even get anywhere near that stage. And that's obviously dependent on whether India go down a similar route in talent testing. I mean, on the talent testing front, it's not proven as yet to be absolutely 100% valid, because there isn't enough data and enough time that this data has been collected to say whether it really works. And it's probably only in 6 or 7 years' time that we're actually going to start to become into any sort of conclusions on it. But, you know, going back to a 9-year-old, I think it's the same for any 9-year-old anywhere in the world. Just really, it's all about passion and just get in there and have a bit of fun and get along to a cricket club. But also in India, you know, mix in your formal learning around a cricket club and coaching, also with playing some street cricket as well, because that's how people have developed in India for you know, decades, and developed really well. So a mix of both, a bit of combination of getting down the club and working with some of the great coaches that they have out there, but also having a bit of fun and finding your own way in tape ball or street cricket, which is played pretty much everywhere, as we know, in India.
Yeah, if I can tackle the second part of that question, saying about how will it affect his studies and his health. I mean, if he's enjoying it and it's getting him to be active, then there's plenty of evidence to say that it can the academic side can only be not only but is positively influenced by the sporting side, because children who are fitter and more active tend to do better in school than children who are less fit and less active. So as long as it's something where you can see him enjoying it and it's healthy and it's not too much for him, then continue. Obviously, as a parent, it's very important to keep an eye on these things. It is possible for children to do too much, and they can show signs that they are doing too much. Studies can be affected negatively if it goes too far. But I think if he's getting home at 2:30 from a day at school, picking up his cricket bat and saying, "Come on, Dad, let's go and have a game in the street," or let's go to the academy and get some coaching, or whatever it is. If he's driving that and he's excited and wanting to improve himself, then I can't see anything bad from that. That's one of the things, actually, when we were interviewing a big player who we will be announcing properly soon, or if you're a real follower of Pitch Vision Academy, you know who it is. He said to me that he was always pestering his dad to throw him a ball in the back garden so he could give it a whack. And he went on to play international cricket. So if that passion is driving him to play and play and play and play, then I can't see how that's going to be negative at all. It's a positive thing, but as a parent, just keep half an eye on it to make sure that it doesn't go too far.
Yeah, completely agree. Get as much experience from a number of things. Don't just limit it to cricket. And that's probably one of the challenges for India, I think, as a country. And we've discussed it before, the fact that India generally just play cricket. They don't have other sports. And what we're finding over here in England is that players that play a number of different sports in their young years, from the age of 9 to 16, 17, actually progress in cricket a lot quicker than those that just stay in there and just play cricket alone. And the word that associates with that is the obsession word. And it's something that I've become quite keen on finding a bit more about. And one of my friends works with the Sky road bike racing team and Team G at GB biking lot, which includes the likes of Sir Bradley Wiggins. And he talks about the great thing that Sir Bradley Wiggins has been able to do over the years is not to be obsessed, but to be focused. And there's a real difference between the two. And obsession is that you don't give yourself any downtime at all. And the only thing that dominates your life and your thought processes is your cycling, in his case, or cricket in the youngster's case. And what tends to happen with people that are obsessed is that they have a very short window of optimal success, and then they tend to burn out. And what they find in cycling is that they might go one Olympic cycle, these type of people, you have 4 years, be quite successful, and then fall off the face of the earth in terms of high performance. Whereas somebody like Bradley Wiggins has done four cycles now of an Olympics, 4 years, because he's been focused. And he actually is great. Once he gets away from the sport, he goes and kicks a football around with his mates, or goes and plays with his kids in the back garden, or goes and immerses himself in one of his other passions, which is fashion and music, as opposed to just being totally obsessed on the one thing. And this goes the same for a lot of different sportsmen. So somebody like Sebastian Vettel, who's very intense in Formula One, one of his biggest things is comedy, and he's a massive fan of all sorts of comedy and goes to comedy clubs all over the world, watches films all the time, and that's how he fills himself with another passion rather than just Formula One racing. So it's really vital that instead of obsession, that we try and encourage youngsters to be focused and have other things in their life that they can turn to, and that helps to give them perspective and helps to give them longevity in the game.
Just you mentioning that, Gareth, I have another example of that from the world of acting. Daniel Day-Lewis, who is renowned for becoming his roles. He's a method actor where he throws himself into a role so incredibly deeply. When he's done that, after he's done that, he goes and mends shoes.
Yeah. absolutely.
Because it's absolutely the complete opposite. You know, it's just a very simple thing where he can just go and mend some shoes and just completely do this very simple task, which is not the complete opposite of becoming a character for a film. So there's an example from a different world, but it's equally apt.
But exactly, it is. And with him, he goes from one great film to the next, but there's quite big gaps in between because he makes sure that he does it right rather than just doing it all of the time. So as you say, he's very thorough in his preparation and his research into each role. But actually what he does is then give him some lead time in between before he goes back to being brilliant again when he does a Lincoln or any of the other films that he's been so brilliant in.
Okay, so it's soapbox time. Berners is in the chair, on the box, ready to rant 60 seconds, but no more. We'll be keeping a tight schedule this week, Berners. Away you go.
Well, this week, as often with me, it is applicable to cricket. And it is a fundamental part of amateur cricket, certainly, and the international game. But more to do with the kind of fickle approach of individuals to... engaging people on their performance in certain situations and then, you know, living by the gun kind of mentality where you come in for one game and they're off. And we hear at the moment, you know, a lot of scrutiny as we approach the ICC trophy with the warm-up games, you know, teams getting bowled out for underpar scores and people almost automatically assume that it's, you know, you know, it's as if they've the self-eject button. But quite often these people and these teams will come back to haunt them with performances of high regard. So my sense of this is give people a chance, let them relax, focus on their game. And there's certain timescales I think that you can apply to giving people a chance rather than going storming in people in the China shop.
That is the end of the show for this week. We've come to the conclusion. But before we leave, we just have a couple of things that we need to sort out. And the first of those is the winner of this week's prize. So we had Lee. He had a question about eyesight. And we had Joffy. And he had a question about his son. A couple of questions about his son. So which one do you think is going to win the prize of the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy, Garrus?
Well, I'm going to go for Joffy's this week because I think it's going to probably impact on more people. You know, having working with children and having your sons playing the game and your daughters playing the game at a young age is going to be more prevalent than somebody being potentially affected by colour blindness and the focus thing of the eyes. So let's go with that one this week. Well done, Joffy.
Yeah, well done. And we did skim over it as well quite quickly. So hopefully there were some answers in there. But yeah, there's probably going to be 10 more questions coming from the answer that we gave. But then that's never a bad thing because the more you delve into it, the more you can find out.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the beauty of the question in some ways. We'd need 2 or 3 shows to get through it in full.
Yeah, precisely. So that is this week's winner. Berners, if someone wanted to send in their question, have it answered and also win a prize, what would they need to do?
They can give us a call at 02088 167 691, or they can drop us some web mail and our web address is coach@pitchvision.com.
It is indeed, yep. You can find us at http://www.pitchvision.com. Just because no one ever says that in full, do they, anymore, so why not?
It's not an email, it's webmail.
Yeah. We're also on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. We are posting videos on there. You can also post your questions if you so desire. And if you want to listen to the show every week, you can do so using iTunes. Do a search for Pitch Vision Academy in there. Or if you don't use iTunes, you can use any other pod-catching program that you want. Just head to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link and follow the instructions there. And that's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Garrus. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, guys.